Hello, this is Jeffrey Milburn, and this is the OmniArt Salon number 242. It is a lovely conversation I had with Ernesto Ortiz, a noted healer, shaman, writer, and artist. Ernesto has devoted his life to exploring and communicating the language of the heart, primal movement, and deep inner spaces, and is the creator of Dreamcatcher, a structure used for healing that uses sacred geometry and vibroacoustics. During the past 25 years, he's taken thousands of people on a journey from physical and emotional inertia to the freedom of ecstasy, from the chaos of the chattering ego mind to the blessed emptiness of stillness and inner silence. Cultures are no barrier, as he has presented seminars and intensives in Canada, Europe, Australia, Egypt, Bali, Latin America, the Caribbean, and the United States. Ernesto is the founder of Journey to the Heart, author of In the Presence of Love, The Akashic Records Level 1, Tantric Shamanism, The Art of Relationships, and other books. I think you will find this conversation with Ernesto a delightful and revealing shamanic exploration in itself. And so now, the Omni Art Salon proudly presents The Heart Journey of Ernesto Ortiz. Ernesto, thank you so much for joining me today in the Omni Art Salon. I'm really looking forward to hearing about your remarkable, multifaceted approach to consciousness and healing and other things, too. I mean, it's really, just looking at your website, I saw a lot going on there, so I'm really interested to hear more about it.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Jeffrey.
Absolutely. Definitely. And we've been having a really good time here at the International Conference on Science and Consciousness, and it's kind of wrapping up today, I guess.
Yeah, today's the last day, yeah.
But what a huge, a wide berth of information being presented.
Mm-hmm.
It's really marvelous. And so you gave your presentation yesterday.
Was today.
It? Today.
This morning.
Oh, this morning. And what was the name of it?
Sacred Geometry and Light Language.
Ah, okay, good. And Sacred Geometry is very prominent now. It's coming through again in many ways, and we'll talk about that. But the first question I like to ask people who are on the show is just about who they are. And that comes in the form of a question about where were you born, what was your childhood like, and how did that lead you to work with what you are doing today?
Hmm. Where was I born? I was born in Mexico City. And what was my childhood like was just wonderful, absolutely amazing, delightful, just beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Childhood. I was born into a fairly well-to-do family, which is kind of nice.
Mm-hmm.
They own coffee plantations, and I remember many years going to the coffee plantation for vacation, and instead of having the attraction to want to stay inside the house with my cousins and learn how to play chess and a musical instrument or whatever they were doing, I'd rather just run outside and be with the people, you know. And by being with the people, I learned how to pick coffee and threw my shoes off, and I was barefoot and went to their little homes, very humble little homes, sat on the floor with them, and ate rice and beans and tortillas.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time observe their way of life, you know, the lifestyle, their way they heal, their joys, their pains, because this didn't happen one time but many times.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, the basic introduction to Mexican shamanism, just as a kid by observing, by mm-hmm. watching, you know, what's going on. And that to me was just fascinating, because My family was professional. Mm-hmm. My mother was a dentist. You know, aunts, uncles were doctors and attorneys and all that. So I had the great opportunity to see the differences between the more professional, more medical approach to healing, mm-hmm. and at the same time to see the shamanic way, the more natural way, healing with plants, taking an egg and rub the egg over the entire person's body and then crack the egg and to see that what came out was just black.
Wow.
You know, and just being fascinated by that and wondering how and why that takes place. So the deep connection with nature and the deep connection with Mexican shamanism at that early age impacted me and resonated inside of me. It was just a wonderful duality that life presented, mm-hmm. To be in those two worlds and to basically make peace with both worlds and to know that I had to walk right down the middle, which has for me set up a beautiful ground floor of my ability to walk between worlds, is what mm-hmm. I call it. And what I mean is I can be on the side of the material world, not as a materialistic individual, but functioning in the material world very effectively, loving money and the use of it, and being able to put a tuxedo if I have to and go to a super duper party, and at the same time walk to the other side and throw my shoes off and just have a backpack on my back and just hike up the mountain and be with nature and shaman. So that early start basically was the what initiated my unknown desire to learn more about nature, mm-hmm. about shamanism, and life based on what I desire start presenting the opportunities. Later on in my late teens, I met, I had two very good friends that their mother was into shamanism as well. And a little bit older now, 15, 16 years old, I was then again able to observe, you know, different forms of shamanism and take it in a little bit more. And then again, so I have had wonderful teachers, just little people that from different countries in South America, in Asia, in Mexico, that have been the little shaman, medicine men and women of their own tribe, mm-hmm. that no one will ever know about them, as well as world-renowned teachers, you know, Michael Harner or others that have exposed shamanism in this way. So with that, basically, that was the initial interest in what I do.
Did your family know about you going and working with the shamans when you were 12 years old?
Sure.
And how did they feel about it?
They thought I was crazy.
Because they had picked up the whole Western viewpoint as the only really sophisticated.
Well, they're high society people, mm-hmm. you know. In Mexico, you belong to a certain, back then, you belong to a certain social class, and that is basically pretty much where you move in that social class. And when I left the house and went out into the field and came back all with no shoes and muddy, my mom looked at me and just was, in awe. What possessed you to go out and be with them, so to speak, mm-hmm. instead of here with us? So yeah, they did not understand me. I was always the rebel, the black sheep of the family all along, the one that heard voices and mm-hmm. the one that started doing this and that, and later in my early teens started experimenting with what I call teacher plants, mm-hmm. Peyote, ayahuasca, mushrooms and all of that, and then my life has changed, and they never really got the essence of the richness of what I was able to mm-hmm. perceive, which is the vastness of the native cultures of not only Mexico but the world.
Did you go through a formal education then, university, to satisfy their paradigm?
Well, no, actually, not to satisfy. I have never felt the need in my life to satisfy the needs of others. Mm-hmm. You know, that is something that is just built in within me. I think it's just good merits from past karma, from previous lives or something. Because they did try that at an early age when I was 17 to bribe me, basically with money. Mm-hmm. You know, go to Europe, we'll buy you a brand new Corvette to spend 6 months there, stay away from this, and come back, become a medical doctor or a dentist or whatever. And I was like, no, that's not me. So when I was 17 and a half years old, I left, mm-hmm. I left my home. And my mom said to me, if you leave now, I will not leave you any inheritance. And I said, well, that's okay. I will create my own wealth and fortune. And she died 15 years ago, and she kept her promise. No, she didn't leave me anything at all. But that's okay with me, because once I moved from Mexico City, I went to San Diego, California, and then I started just connecting with a different world, mm-hmm. and was into music big time, and then my interest in photography was huge, and then I started going to photography school. I went to first San Diego City College and then San Diego State University. My degree was photography, and then mm-hmm. I started studying photography, which took me in my early 20s to pursue that interest in photography. And I went to South America, spent 2.5 years traveling with a backpack and, my 2-3 cameras on my back, doing a photographic study of the native cultures of Wonderful. South America. Fabulous. And with that, again, meeting a lot of people, a lot of shamans, a lot of people. So, no, I never really felt like I needed to satisfy my family for whatever they needed.
No, they gave you an independent spirit somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
Or you came in with it, probably.
Rebellious spirit,
You can't imagine how many people I talk to are the black sheep of their family. Mm. It almost seems that is one of the prerequisites to kind of move into the higher realms, to be able to have the spiritual and emotional strength to break out of the box.
That's right.
Yeah.
If you look at all the spiritual leaders from around the world, from Jesus Christ to the present, I call them the transformers, mm-hmm. people that have had enough energy from within them to be different and to transform themselves and go through a process of transformation that has impacted the world. And that cannot happen if you stay in your box.
Right.
You have to stay step outside of the box. You have to break boundaries. You have to break cultural family dynamics and then take risks.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
To me, that's what life is all about. It's about taking risks.
Well, tell us a little bit about why someone benefits from working with a shaman. There's actually a young lady here in the hotel who says, I want to know about shamanism. That, to me, rang a bell, and I won't go into my interpretation, but I'd like to hear what you have to say, because you've had so much experience with that. What is the greatest benefit of working with a shaman?
To learn how to empower yourself so you do it for yourself and not having somebody else do it for you.
That's great. That's very succinct.
Bottom line.
And the shaman is bringing you, what, a new language? A new language of your inner terrain? Opening you up to it? What is it?
The shaman is... let's divide into aspects. A shaman that practices shamanism for his tribe, for his clan, and he is the medicine man or woman of that tribe, and the only thing that they do is basically perform all their rites, mm-hmm. All the healings, bring the wisdom for those that are nearby, those that need it. And of course, there's always the shaman, the apprentice of the shaman, but they are the ones that are there to serve others in that capacity. And they are the ones that are the shamans that are the teachers that maybe belong to that tribe, but in today's world they have separated for the most part from the tribal community, and they have integrated themselves into society, mm-hmm. into different Western cultures, to be able to teach shamanic principles to people that are interested.
Mm-hmm.
If we let ourselves go back and we start looking at our family tree and we go back and back and back, no matter what nationality you come from, not what culture you come from, you will discover that your roots, our roots, are shamanic in nature.
Mm-hmm.
So there's something within us that has that curiosity that once that drum is beaten, once we resonate to a certain frequency, we want to awaken to the shamanic roots. And what I practice is urban shamanism, mm-hmm. because, and what I teach is urban shamanism. I don't live out in the boonies, you know, where I can be connected to nature, deeply connected to nature 24/7. I live in Miami, Florida. Mm-hmm. You know, even though I travel the world, I do live in Miami, Florida. So what I like is to teach people the principles of shamanism. You know, a soul retrieval, power animal retrieval, how to access the underworld, how to safely enter and explore and out with an altered state of consciousness the different aspects of who we are, mm-hmm. and then utilize all of those different modalities, how to drum, how to trance, to a dance, how to use the rattle, how to create an altar for ritual, how to use sacred geometry to bring down that energy into our life. But at the bottom line of all of this is, how do you integrate and how do you apply all of this knowledge to your daily life? Mm-hmm. Is there a practical application to any and all of these? Is basically the way I open my talk today. You have here during this conference, Science and Consciousness, there has been some amazing speakers. And people attend, you know, 5, 6, 7, possibly even more conferences or classes during the 5 or 6 days of the conference. So they accumulate a lot of knowledge, you know, so their mm-hmm. head can be 10 times bigger than it is based on the accumulation of information that they receive. However, that is fine and dandy, but is there a practical application of that into your life?
Right. And there's a lot of that goes around. You know, there's the what I call spirit speak. Mm-hmm. It's like accessing the lingo of a culture without actually making it part of your being mm-hmm. is very different. So, and I think these are stages of actually development, knowledge. And knowledge leads to knowing, but knowledge is not knowing.
Right.
That's there's a difference. It's like I know of that piece of information, but actually integrating into your molecular structure of all your inner bodies and your physical and your mind, it's very different.
Very, very different. And how mm-hmm. to apply that knowledge. I can be very knowledgeable. I just came back from Egypt a week ago. I was there for 3 weeks. I took a group there, an amazing trip. So we can talk with a scholar about Egypt. Someone that has been studying Egypt for 30 years of their life, mm-hmm. and they can tell you the position of the pyramids, every single temple. They can tell you everything about, you know, being there. So they have the knowledge of Egypt.
Right.
But if they have never been there, you ask the question, what is the air like? How does it feel to touch the sand that is right next to the Great Pyramid? They cannot tell you that.
Right.
So that piece is that missing link that for me is so important. Knowledge is one thing, but experiential knowledge is even more.
Right.
Because after all, we live in the planet of emotions. And when you have an experience that impacts you and creates a physical, emotional response, then that which you're experiencing, you're going to be able to anchor it down into the physical.
Right. Well, can you tell us about the dream catcher? You have it on your website as capital D, period R, period E, period A, period M, period. I'm very intrigued by that. Can you tell us what that is?
And D is dodecahedron, which is one of the most perfect shapes in the right. universe. It's based on sacred geometry, one of the five platonic solids.
Mm-hmm.
R is resonance.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an energy that resonates within the dodecahedron. Energy is for the E. A is amplified, and then is music. So it is a chamber basically that is created out of copper
mm-hmm.
That is large enough for a table, like a, in this case, not like massage table, but a futon that is low enough to be inside of the dodecahedron, where I have speakers mounted to the frame of the structure, as well as two transducers underneath the table, the futon,
mm-hmm.
and very specific music is played when the client is inside.
I've actually been in this.
I've forgotten
all about it. I did it in 1996.
Okay.
Yeah, I remember this. Yeah. You have people helping you do this around the country,
don't you? It's a very, very powerful structure that really amplifies, you know, energy, and because of the energy that is built in within the dodecahedron, there is tremendous amount of healing that takes place within it. Yeah.
So do you have a specific process you go through with people when they're working with this dream catcher?
It can be a one-time experience for some, or it can be a series of experiences. You know, I don't ever request or, you know, tell people that they have to have a certain number of sessions, because that is limiting. That is really kind of structuring in a way. I am not someone that is not very structured, you know, in a way. So I don't like that. So people can come in. Like my daughter, when she first saw it, you know, she was, I don't know, maybe 14, 15 years old, and she said, well, what can possibly happen to me inside of that thing? I said, I don't know. Why don't you get inside and find out? You know, the only thing that you have to do is just get on that futon, lie down, and just be open to listen to the music. And after 15 minutes, she was crying. She was just bawling, because of the emotions being inside of that chamber, just stirred up the emotions. Yeah. So that opened her up to have an experience that she was not expecting or anticipating. Mm-hmm. And as a result of that, you know, with my guidance being there, she was able to tap into specific issues that at the time were significant to her. And as the emotions came up, she was able to see them, resolve them, and heal them.
Mm-hmm. What is the simplest thing a person can do to access their deepest innate wisdom?
Have an open heart. Have an open heart. It's all right there.
Mm-hmm.
The heart is divided in two segments. The heart chakra, is divided in two segments. There is the upper chamber of the heart and the lower chamber of the heart. The lower chamber of the heart is the aspect of the heart that connects us to human love. The upper chamber of the heart is what connects us to divine love. Mm-hmm. And right in the middle, there is an altar that is called, for Native Americans, the Shante Ishta, is the center or the eye of the heart. That right there is the center of creation. That is where we go and really kneel down in reverence to our own higher self, to our own divinity.
Mm-hmm.
And right there is where we go, and if we open that eye of the heart, that Shante Ishta, to have just about anything, to create, to receive, to have anything, is where it's at.
That's wonderful. I hadn't heard that model before. I totally get it. That makes sense. So how would you define this language of the heart, then? It's like a language, isn't it? How would you describe it to someone who has never heard of this?
If people believe in God, in Source, in Spirit, if they believe in a universal energy that sustains and balances the universe and the planet, then that Source, that, let's just call it God or the Spirit, wants the best for us. After all, just look at where Spirit has placed us. We are not living on Mars. We're not in Venus or other places where we don't have the abundance of resources. We are living in the planet of choice. We only have to look up in the sky, at the sky, and connect with the clouds, the rivers, the animals. I mean, this is prime real estate in the universe. I mean, this is just so,
it's true.
So incredible if you look at it that way. And so if that is the case, if an energy, a force, God, a Spirit created this planet and is gifting this to us, because we're taking embodiment here, that same Source, that same Spirit wants the best for us. And the way that Spirit communicates to us is through the language of love. And if we are able to listen to the language of love, then that language is perceived and deciphered through the heart. So the heart is really what The heart is the only one of the chakras, if we want to talk a little bit about chakras, that doesn't work with any other chakra. The heart works alone. It's not connected with the first or the seventh or the second and the sixth or anything like that. It's the only one that works by itself. But because it works by itself, it's the master. It's like the conductor of the orchestra. Mm-hmm. It's the one that generates and gives energy to all of the other chakras for our own well-being. However, within the heart chakra, there are the two chambers that I mentioned before. So even the heart has the capacity to work in duality like that.
Mm-hmm.
So the language of the heart, and if we learn how to drop our attention to take refuge in the heart, then we can allow for the good for a good balance to all of the other chakras and be able to be from that space, be open and receive the information that is available to us from with our own from our own inner wisdom,
mm-hmm.
as well as the wisdom from spirit.
Mm. Well said. Well, what is tantric shamanism? And how do you utilize it in your work?
This is tantric shamanism is something that came up to me about 3-4 years ago. I have been practicing, as you know, shamanism for many years in different degrees of intensity, as well as studying tantra for a long time. Then to realize that they blend, they mix together very, very nicely. There's another component, which is trance dance, mm-hmm. that goes into the same melting pot. And what I realize is that they weave together so nicely that many people, first of all, when they hear the word tantra, they think immediately about sex.
Mm-hmm.
And the sexual part of tantra is 20% of tantra. I don't teach sexual tantra. I teach tantra as a lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to me, tantra is to accept and say yes to life.
Mm-hmm.
If you're able to do that, then you are living in a tantric way.
Mm-hmm.
So by blending or mixing the principles of tantra and shamanism and anchoring those through trance dance, then we are able to have more of a total experience during a workshop in the way that I teach it. Tantra or tantric shamanism is really the weaving of two realities, the seen and the unseen, and anchor them down into the physical plane.
Oh. Do you have, where did you learn your tantra? Did you learn it through reading, or did you learn it through a yoga?
No.
Or a yogi, rather?
Yeah. I used to do a lot of reading, but I am not so much the mental type of person.
Mm-hmm.
I need to have experiential mm-hmm. experiences. You know, I need to have the hands-on type of work. In my early teens, you know, I started learning tantric yoga,
mm-hmm.
and that was wonderful. Osho has been, for a long, long time, one of my great teachers,
mm-hmm.
you know, about many things, but tantra as well. I have a very, very dear friend that also spent a significant amount of time, years, with Osho. And he has been a good tantric teacher for me. There has been other individuals that Margo Anand that has been impactful in my life with
mm-hmm.
that. So it's just a combination of teachers that have created or given me the knowledge to put it all together. For me, what I do, anything that I teach, is it doesn't come. It hasn't really come from one source.
Mm-hmm.
It has come to me from multiple sources. And the only thing that I do is basically, I have sat with this information for many years. I have put it to use because to me, as you got it by now, the practical application is really the most important. Otherwise,
right.
It's just knowledge that goes to waste. But once I create enough momentum with a certain thing to really apply it into my life, and then the most important thing to me in life is not only to follow my spiritual guidance, but what can I possibly do to impact the well-being of someone that comes across my path? Mm-hmm. Is there anything that I can do to help you in your path? Is there anything that I can share with you that will impact your life, that can help you either go through the process of transformation or give you the awaken within you, the need to go and find out more about whatever is that's been said through other teachers. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And in the law of attraction, we always find the right teacher for the right modality that we're looking for.
Right.
So with any and all of these, I just process all of the information, put it all together, and share it. So with tantric shamanism is all those years of tantric personal work and the years of shamanism, and at the same time the years of trance dance through, you know, Frank Natali, which was also a good tantric teacher for me, and put it all together into one neat package that now I call trance dance and tantric shamanism. I do 10 to 14 days retreats, intensives with this, and the magic that happens in that time and the process of transformation, the awakening of the chakras, the healing that takes place of the participants has been just phenomenal.
Wow, that's exciting.
It's very beautiful.
Well, how did you learn about sacred geometry then? You have all these interesting teachers, and why do you think it's so important to consciousness development? Mm.
It is important to have conscious development because we are surrounded by sacred geometry. We are surrounded by geometry. Just look at this room. We are in a very, very large room that is just about empty except for this table in the center and two chairs. So we are inside of a cube right here. And the cube is providing a specific function. If we look at it from the standpoint of sacred geometry, the cube is there to contain, to hold energy. So when we start, when we understand the dynamics of sacred geometry or geometry that is outside of the self and how that resonates to what is within the self, then we have the ability to be a conscious co-creators of our reality. Mm-hmm. If we look at the universe is working, is maintaining a very specific function, and is perfect and is in perfect order. And if we look at it, Greg Braden last night did a lecture that was just beautiful, with an amazing slideshow presentation that showed galaxies and planets, and he was the constellations, the zodiacs, and putting all the lines connecting the whole thing, and it was just perfect like that.
Geometry's perfect.
Plato said that every piece of matter is broken down into specific shapes and colors. Wow, think about that one. Every piece of matter is broken down into very specific shapes and colors. So that means that everything that is without as well as within has a very specific shape or color. Now, we can look at this, at the geometry that is within ourselves, and ask ourselves, is this geometry in line or in alignment with what I am, some people will say, trying to create? Mm-hmm. But I'm going to eliminate the word try, what I am creating.
Right.
And if it's not, then sacred geometry can come in to provide the shapes and the colors that can greatly support the manifestation of that, is the, of that which we are creating. Mm-hmm. Because no matter what, you're creating something.
Well, it's happening regardless. The geometries are going to show up whatever state of consciousness you're in.
Absolutely.
But we're talking about a goal. That's what I'm hearing from you. Mm-hmm. So the sacred geometry, the geometrical structures of the world we wish to live in, you're talking about, you know, manifesting that.
Consciously.
Right. Consciously manifesting.
Consciously.
Right.
If we consciously are aware of shapes and colors and how they can come to support that world that we live in, then our world can be magnificent.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to look at my life through my chakra system.
Mm-hmm.
And the questions that I ask and I have asked myself many times is, what is the relationship of my first chakra to the way that I am living? What is the way that my second chakra is relating to the world. Third, fourth, fifth, sixth, etc., all the way. So by looking at this type of relationship and by knowing the energy that a specific chakra is generating, the function of the third chakra is emotions. This is the seat of the emotions. So what is my relationship to my emotions? What is the relationship that I have to my third chakra? Is it so saturated and full that I am incapable of manifesting, sharing my emotions? Am I able to cry when I have to and feel deeply sadness, joy, anger, love, passion, whatever it may be, when I am activating that chakra? And if I am not in the flow that I, for myself, want to have, then I look at that relationship between life and that chakra, and then I can, if I am blocked there, then I can bring specific geometric shapes and colors to create flow or whatever may be in that chakra.
How do you bring the shapes in?
First of all, by seeing those shapes on a piece of paper, because they're actual shapes that can be studied and looked at. So you can look at the shape and you can look at the color that is going to best support that shape. And then through intention, you bring down, again, through the chakra system, that is specific shape. Every shape that we bring into our body, whether it's one single shape or a grid that is a 744 shape grid that we bring into our system, enters, let's just talk about the seven shape grid, that enters through the seventh chakra and goes down to the particular chakra where the shape is needed. So if we're talking about the solar plexus, I'm going to visualize, I'm going to see the shape and the color that I want to best support me on the opening of my solar plexus, so I can be more available to my own feelings and emotions. So I visualize that shape and the color in front of me, then I bring it all the way up to be approximately 10 inches above my crown, my head. And then through breathing, I allow that shape to descend as an elevator is gently descending to the third floor, which is the third chakra, and to be there. Once it's there, that elevator door opens and the energy that is contained within that shape and that color can
influence. Is that a permanent thing, or is it something you have to do a lot?
Well, shapes and colors, if it's a seven shape grid that you are creating, that grid will stay active for approximately 12 months. If it's a single shape and color that you are emanating or beaming at yourself or somebody else, that lasts for approximately 3 hours.
Okay. How have you integrated native shaman work with your explorations into the Akashic records? We've talked about the geometries, we've talked about the tantric, but the Akashic records is a whole field, you know, and the nomenclature of OmniArt is the causal dimension. How do you bring it in through shamanistic techniques?
I don't. There are certain things that need to be left alone where they are, and they have their own compartment. You know, I have, in my exploration of shamanism, I have been able to see how shamanism and tantra and trance dance kind of weave and they integrate, you know, into each other with ease. Sacred geometry, I mean, the Akashic Records is, to me, the highest of teachings that I own, and is the highest of tools that I have for my own personal guidance, intuition, way of living. So the Akashic Records are a separate entity, all of their own, that deserves to be left intact in the way that you know, that they are.
Do you access them in your own personal work?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Are you aware? Is it more of a an understanding, or is it something you specifically practice to go to them?
practice to go to them. I have been accessing my own Akashic records for approximately 17 years through a sacred prayer. And I have been teaching the Akashic records for approximately 14 years now. I do Akashic record intensives.
Oh, okay.
And these are, in these intensives, I teach all three levels of the Akashic records. The level one class is all about you. You learn a sacred prayer that gives you access to your own Akashic records.
Okay.
So you learn about the art of questioning, how to start looking at patterns, behaviors, addictions, codependencies, why repetitive patterns happen all the time, why you are not able to make more money than you want to, why you attract the same type of relationship again and again and again.
Mm-hmm.
All of those questions that we want to have answers for, and sometimes we go through certain seminars and whatever, but they keep on happening, is because they could be coming from a previous life, you know,
mm-hmm.
or they are patterns that are deeply rooted within our DNA, or we have learned in this lifetime at an early childhood. And the Akashic Records gives us the ability to tap into that information, to our book of life, and be able to look deep within and to get to the root cause of whatever it may be, to bring healing, to bring the light to that which is hidden.
Mm-hmm.
So,
what about level two? What is level two?
Level two is, the three levels are really delicious, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They are. I don't want to use that word, delicious.
That's a good word. I like that.
Yeah, so do I. The Akashic Records, just backtrack a little bit, they're not for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Because they put you face to face with the real you.
Mm-hmm.
If you have an open heart, you asked me that earlier, the only requirement, the only ingredient that is needed to be able to access the Akashic Records is an open heart.
Mm-hmm.
But people are afraid of really looking deep within.
Mm-hmm.
People want to heal, but they just want to heal now, forget about what happened way back, you know, when I was 3 years old, or maybe what happened in a past life that is making me behave and do the things that I do today.
Mm-hmm.
So that level one class is extremely important because it's all about you. It's all about you. The second level of the Akashic Records is when you learn how to open the records for others.
Mm-hmm.
And that opening, giving new and complete different dimensions to the Akashic Records, now is not about you anymore. Out of your own personal healing, now you can truly be of service to others.
Mm-hmm.
And the Akashic Records, knowing that they are your book of life, when you have the opportunity to be of service to somebody else by opening their record, their Akashic records, their book of life, is entering sacred space.
Mm-hmm.
And from that sacred space, based on their questions, you give them information that you receive from the masters and teachers for their own good. And I have seen just powerful healings and transformations from the information that other people receive.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, I've seen people that follow the guidance, the recipe, so to speak, that the masters give them, and within 6 months they are completely free of breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's really, really powerful. The third level of the Akashic Records is the integration of the previous two. You get deeper, much, much deeper into the art of questioning, ancestral healing, genealogy healing. Many times we ask ourselves, I have asked myself, is my ancestry, my genealogy really serving me?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I have received my answer. Some people say yes, and some people say no. Some people feel that only a portion of that genealogy is serving them, and some other portions don't.
Mm-hmm.
But with that, being able to get into that type of healing, and then we do imaginal cells that are hidden within the DNA that are holding us back. And once we discover those imaginal cells, we can transform and blast them out. And what is hiding behind them is the Amos code, which is God's fingerprint within our DNA.
Mm-hmm.
And when we do that, life transforms in a magical way. We also do what I call demon work, but not demon as a form of a being that sits there with a trident and horns and stuff, but a demon is our greatest or deepest fears.
Right. Right.
And by transforming those into positive allies, we can change the dynamics that we have to just about every relationship that we have with ourselves and others in life.
So people who work with you work for you a long period of time, don't they?
Yes and no. You know, there are many people. I just finished a three-week intensive in Egypt with the Akashic Records. Mm-hmm. So on this, most of the people that came to this particular retreat are European.
Oh.
So we don't have it's the first time that I actually use a translator mm-hmm. to teach, you know, because most of them, 90%, spoke only French, and I only speak a couple of words of French. You know, oui and bonjour.
Ou la salle de bain.
Yeah. So are we going to continue working together? Possibly, mm-hmm. you know, over the phone. I do teleconferences mm-hmm. that we work like that. But, you know, the knowledge of the Akashic Records is compacted like that. Mm-hmm. And if someone takes level 1, 2, and 3, and they really go, you know, run with it, they start using that information, I don't want to be needed as a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be and will never be a guru that has followers mm-hmm. like that. I am a teacher. I am someone that has a certain amount of knowledge. I want to give it to you. I want you to be empowered by that. And I want you to go and not be dependent on me to continue
right.
teaching you for the next 10 years. But if we come and go, if our paths cross, you know, several times for me to share more of what I know, what I receive with you, then I'm happy. But I don't like followers.
Besides, then you're responsible for all their stuff.
Yeah.
You don't want that. Now, I totally concur with you on that. And there's one thing I think would be really helpful, though, and we talked about it earlier, was the opening of the heart. And maybe you could just tell some of the listeners, what do you think is the fastest way to get your heart open? What's the most effective way to get your heart open in any situation?
People guard two areas big time. One is the heart, and the other one is the solar plexus. I have never really met anyone that has not in one way or another been wounded in the heart.
Mm-hmm.
So we carry that, you know, that idea that we have to protect the heart. How many times you've heard someone that fell out of love or their relationship ended and, you know, my heart is broken
mm-hmm.
and I will never open my heart to anyone else.
Right.
And that kind of thing. You hear those comments all the time. The best way is to me, there are four aspects of love, but one of the aspects of love is meditation. And if we learn how to meditate, and I had a teacher, a Zen teacher when I was in my early teens, that whacked me with a willow branch every time I moved, you know, when I was meditating and I just could not stand, you know, sit still. Finally, I said, you know what, this is just not working for me to sit here for an hour. I have so much energy that I just have to move, and every time you move, you whack me with this branch. It just doesn't feel good. And then he said to me, what you have to do is learn how to meditate for 1 minute. But when you sit for 1 minute, give yourself permission to focus all of your attention, all of your intention on that inner piece of meditation. And when you master that 1 minute, maybe you can move to 2 minutes, and then to 3 and 5, and then 20 and 30, and then 1 hour. So go away. Don't come back to the center until you have mastered that 1 minute. And that lesson was so powerful and so beautiful for me. So what I would tell people is learn to meditate.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to sit there cross-legged or whatever, you know, for an hour, because then your mind is going to wander all over the place and you're wasting your time. But meditate for 1 minute. And when you do that, just drop your attention. It's like gulping, you know, gulping straight down into your heart. And just drop your attention right there to your heart and allow your heart to gently open. Just feel the heart. And if you want to add a little bit to that, the sound ah, which is A-H, is the sound of the heart.
Mm-hmm.
So tone or chant the ah, which is the breath of God, is creation. That sound is how God created the universe. If we can put the sacred geometry to ah, when we say ah, that emanation of breath is encased in thousands or millions of little molecules that have this the symbol, the geometric symbol ah, mm-hmm. in them. And you just sit there and you go, you tone or chant ah, and drop that into your heart and allow that sound to gently bathe, feel your heart, heal your heart, and with that, very slowly, your heart will start opening little by little.
Oh, okay. Ah.
Ah.
Ah. Ah, so.
I see.
Well, this has been wonderful, Ernesto. I've really enjoyed listening to you. And how do people find you on the net?
Well, they can go to my website, you mm-hmm. know, which is journeytotheheart.com.
Mm-hmm.
As journey, then the numerical number 2, mm-hmm. theheart.com. That's my website. They can find me that way.
And you do workshops. You take people on trips and journeys. And it sounds fascinating. I just kept imagining, though, I thought, here you're in Egypt doing this workshop, and you're going to all these wonderful temples and everything. Where did you find space to be alone with your group?
Alone with my group?
Yeah. How did you find... Didn't you... When you had just gather them together so you could be kind of in a sacred space alone, mm-hmm. did you do that as well as you're traveling around?
Oh, absolutely. We schedule private time in different temples.
Mm-hmm.
So we
I see.
You know, yeah. So we have... But we even in those temples that we don't have or schedule private time, we always find a place, a corner in the temple where there is no one there, and I don't mind to be different or either appear foolish in the eyes of others. And I gather the group and we start toning or chanting. We open our Akashic Records as a group right there. There is teaching that takes place. Or we schedule private time in the Great Pyramid, for example. Mm-hmm. We had 2 hours in the Great Pyramid, and it was just magnificent.
It must have been most wonderful. A lot of people don't realize the Great Pyramid was really a mystery school.
It was.
They
absolutely.
Think it's a tomb, but
no.
Another one of those
That's
disinformation
right.
problems. Well, I ask one question of everybody who's on the show, and it goes like this. I'd love to hear your answer, because it's never been answered the same way twice. And that goes like this. If there were one thing that you could tell the whole world that they really need to know, but they just don't seem to be getting, what would that one thing be?
Learn how to love. Learn how to love.
Thank you so much, Ernesto. It's been most wonderful.
My pleasure, Jeffrey. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.